Hey everyone, Raven here. Today on Plant Save My Life, I'm very excited to welcome Dr. Cody Peterson, PharmD. Dr. Peterson is a pediatric pharmacist as well as a cannabis science expert, sitting on several advisory boards. Additionally, Dr. Peterson is the chief science officer of the Kenigma, an evidence-based cannabis education resource. Today, we'll be talking about how he got into plant medicine, how he applies this knowledge to pediatric populations, and how he hopes to shape the future of cannabis education. So join me as we welcome Dr. Cody Peterson to the show. Also, a quick disclaimer, while I make every effort to broadcast correct information, I myself am still learning. I promise to double-check all my facts, but I realize that plant medicine is a constantly changing science and art. So the views and opinions expressed on this show are intended purely for educational and informative purposes. No topics are intended to be construed as medical advice. Thank you for joining us today on Plant Save My Life, Dr. Cody Peterson. I, of course, know you through collaborating on projects and through the MCSA organization, but I'd love if you'd introduce yourself for our listeners.
Hey, Raven. Thanks for having me on here at Plant Save My Life, or your life, or our lives, perhaps both of them, and many more. My name is Dr. Cody Peterson. I am a clinical pharmacist, technically a clinical pediatric pharmacist, and I'm also a cannabis science expert. Those two things don't seem to go together, but you'd actually be surprised they go together quite well. Now, in addition to that, I'm also the chief science officer of the Kenigma, a science-forward cannabis media company out of Israel. And as well as I've also the founder of the one of the founders of the Pharmacist Cannabis Coalition of California, a nonprofit who's aiming to sort of bridge this gap that's been left between the Board of Cannabis Control, the Board of Pharmacy, and of course the patients and providers. So really just trying to do my best to advocate for bridging some of these gaps that prohibition clearly created, and trying to leverage the skills that I have, you know, as a pharmacist in this cannabis space, which again, are quite similar, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of overlap there. You mentioned that you're a pharmacist, or more specifically, a pediatric pharmacist, and I'm curious as to what kind of obstacles you face whenever you're treating children and adolescents.
More than adults, although, you know, you face unique challenges anytime you're treating a pediatric patient. Now, of course, pediatrics is a generic term for the entire childhood, and everything from, you know, let's say 13 to 18 is kind of the same. But, you know, that period of life between 7 and 12 is a little bit different than the period of life between, you know, 2 and that 7-year-old. And then even before that, the body is changing very rapidly. So that's probably one of the biggest challenging is the rapid and dynamic nature, the interpatient variability that we see. And also response to medicines, right? Kids just have a tendency to be a little less predictable when it comes to how they're going to respond to medicine, which is fine. We're touch and go with plant medicine, but it definitely can create some challenges here and there. And then, of course, you know, the standard things with kids. I don't like pills. I don't like the taste. I forgot to take it. And then, you know, if you're dealing with teenagers, which I sometimes am, you know, now you're dealing with a whole different thing. It's like sometimes it's a very rebellious, a very, you know, too busy for that. Don't worry about that. So it really is going to depend on the child, the circumstance. You know, a lot of the times the kids that I'm treating, at least in the hospital, are chronically ill. And that can be challenging inherently in itself, you know. Just taking care of patients that are very sick can be taxing, I think, both for the pharmacist, sure, the nursing staff, absolutely, and for families and parents as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to consider whenever you're talking about those specific types of conditions with specific populations, so that makes a lot of sense.
So much variability, right?
Exactly.
Big field of pediatrics, but no doubt, you know, when it comes to cannabis and pediatrics or adolescents, at least, you know, there's a lot of concern around, is marijuana or THC bad for my brain? Because there was a lot of propaganda in the 1970s sort of spewing this sort of, you know, conjecture that cannabis or marijuana, as it's known by another name, is bad for the brain. And that's mostly untrue. You know, bad for the brain is anything can be bad for the brain in the wrong amount or at the wrong phase of life. But you know, compared to many other substances, including alcohol and nicotine, THC remains a pretty docile substance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In addition to being a pharmacist, I know you work as the chief scientific officer of the Kenigma, which I just want to say, always putting out amazing work there. I use the graphics and stuff in my own lectures and my own courses all the time. I hope
Nice.
that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Additionally, you're a scientific advisor for several companies and organizations, boards, advisory boards, the PCCC that you mentioned. What keeps you busy? What's your day-to-day like, man?
What keeps me busy? I figured you'd ask like when I found time to sleep. look, I all sorts of things keep me busy. You know, I went kind of ham, starting with the in 2020. I tried to I guess 2019, I tried to go to University of Maryland. That program filled up, so I took a year off and decided I had to do something. So I went crazy listening to podcasts and really diving into cannabis, right? Keeping in mind that as a pharmacist, I sort of have a very good understanding of medicine. So cannabis as medicine wasn't a very big leap. So after listening to podcasts and finding Jason Wilson and curious about cannabis and really helping to expand my knowledge base, I just decided to dip my toes in LinkedIn. And for the first time in my whole life, I was like, I created my profile just 2 years ago, and just started putting out a little bit of my opinion, a little bit of content, and things started taking off. And, you know, it really just sort of, let's say, snowballed into kind of what I'm dealing with now. I mean, I was recruited from LinkedIn by, you know, at the time, the chief of content at the Kenigma, and sort of snowballed into this position where I'm now kind of functioning as the number two on the content side. You know, the same thing could be said about who I've met and who I've connected with to form the PCCC. Is I've went out and I've networked and I got on LinkedIn and I found Jill Simonian and I found numerous pharmacists in California who aligned with my vision and values. So if I guess if I go just straight to it, it's probably generating these messages and creating my brand and getting things out there. It's like one thing that really takes up a lot of my time, and for better or worse, social media is an addictive thing, right? Like this has not been an easy. I stopped using social media for a reason. Let's put it that way. So now coming back into it, it's now trying to reestablish like what my, you know, boundaries are with this technology, et cetera. But definitely LinkedIn takes up a lot of my time. The Kenigma is taking up like 10 to 15 hours of every one of my week, kind of filling it in. I still work full time at the hospital overnights. I've started the nonprofit, and of course, I have a wife who never sees me, and a bunch of other things that I need to be tending to. So it's really less of a question of what keeps me busy, and it's what keeps me going. And what keeps me going is knowing that what I'm doing is elevating sort of my core goals, which are sort of twofold and quite simple. I want to elevate the pharmacist in the cannabis space, accentuating our skills and sort of raising up our stature and elevating our importance in the space. And then I want to help patients. I want to help patients understand and utilize cannabis better. So if you look at everything that I'm doing, I'd like to think that it's right in line with just those two simple things: is elevate pharmacy in cannabis and elevate cannabis as medicine, both you know, as a amazing tool, but also as a medicine that we need to be informed about adverse drug effects and all of these things that with it come with any medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I admire that you're doing the good work out there to really get down into the actual physiology of some of the pharmacology behind cannabis and how maybe the drug-to-drug interactions or how it interacts with particular patients or particular populations. Why is it that you got into, I would love to hear your story on how you got into pharmacy and how you kind of got into cannabis medicine specifically.
The pharmacy story shouldn't take too long. I have a big sister. She's like 16, 17 years older than her. You know, I barely knew the woman by the time. That's rude, Kylie. I'm sorry. I think she's 15 years older than me. The point being.
I'm the youngest of four, and the next oldest is 11 years older than me, so there's a distance.
Yeah, and then it just starts to get blurry. Like I know they're way older. So anyway, you can appreciate like you barely knew this older sibling, your oldest sibling, right? And so I sort of had that, but I did know that she was a pharmacist. So I was heading to be an agricultural engineer. I wanted to make things to water plants with, or I wanted to do some stuff with ceramics. I had all sorts of weird engineer-like paths laid out, and sort of a whim, I went to. You know, I talked to my sister. She's like, I think you should come see what a pharmacist does one day. And I was like, probably too late, don't really care, but my sister asked me to, I'll go check it out. And I really liked it. I saw all sorts of skills that I have sort of being expressed, whether that was problem solving or whether it was communicating to patients, communicating to doctors, or just in general sort of working on workflow in the pharmacy. So I found a lot of things interesting, threw my name in a couple of pharmacy schools, landed in one or two, the rest was history. I ended up going to my sister's alma mater, Duquesne University. And this is a nice, easy transition. So I went to Duquesne in Pittsburgh. And in my first year, I discovered Mary Jane. Technically, I had tried cannabis once my senior year of high school at the encouragement of a friend's father, actually, who passed away shortly after. But the point being is, I had, experimented, but not like hadn't dove in. And I found that freshman year, going through some personal things that, while I was drinking probably too much for your average 18-year-old, the cannabis sort of helped me. And so I kind of clung to that idea and leveraged cannabis a little bit, and then became a pretty regular user. But that wasn't when I realized it was medicine. Like it didn't click for me that I was using anything medicinally, or I was treating an underlying anxiety disorder that had slowly developed over many years. All of that good stuff that I see now. It was just sort of recreation. It was a way to not study. Now, interestingly enough, during that time, during pharmacy school, we were never educated on cannabis. Nothing about weed was ever talked about other than that's a drug of abuse. And if you want to learn anything about it, go to the drug of abuse class. And in the drugs of abuse class, we learn very little about even the endocannabinoid system and all these important things. So basically, exiled from the pharmacy school curriculum. Keep in mind, we're not even talking 10 years ago. So, like, this is not like, yeah, this is not some ancient world of pharmacy. The endocannabinoid system had been known about for 20 years when I graduated, and I was not being taught about it. Now, kind of going back to where cannabis comes in, I'm a healthcare professional. I'm dating a healthcare professional, and her grandma is passing away of pancreatic cancer. Her grandmother had tried all conventional therapy, had tried everything. We were basically in palliative care and moving towards end of life. They were utilizing the standard medications in the end of life, which is morphine and Ativan. One's an opioid and one is a benzo. Both are going to help ease the pain and ease anxiety, but they are indeed going to sedate you. And we see this with a lot of palliative care patients. Not all of them, but many of them end up becoming over-sedated really towards those last few days of their life. And there's very little quality interaction between family and the patient. Now, cannabis can help. And I can tell you this from personal experience. And my first time is what proved to me that cannabis is medicine. I also, at this same time, had been maybe cooking up some brownies in and around the university, and had sort of mastered this canna butter recipe. And the girlfriend at the time had said, "Hey, my grandma sort of mentioned, weed. She remembers it from when she was younger and thought it might help. And can we do this?" And I was like, "Yeah, we can do this. Like I know exactly what to do." So we whipped up a cake. We sent it off to Granny. The first slice within 2 hours, like laughing and giggling and eating a meal with her children. This elderly woman on her deathbed didn't need any pain medicine that night, didn't need morphine, and just really enjoyed her time with her kids. The next day, she tried another slice, had another really great day, even called some family, which was weird because just 2 days ago she was nearly comatose on medicine, and then the next day passed away. With very little need for these really potent medicines. Cannabis didn't fix her, not even close, but it helped her die with dignity. And that really changed my perspective. And I took that and I put it in my pocket and I sort of just walked with it. Like, I knew cannabis was medicine. I still had a friend in weed. And, I was an advocate much more so than before that experience. And I, would tell my friends or people close to me and, share. But I was still in the green closet. And so in 2019, I'm working at a hospital in Southern California where I'm still employed. And we get news that they're altering the tuition reimbursement program. And the tuition reimbursement program is now going to be something sort of more worthwhile. So I'm excited, but I'm not going back to school. I've got my doctorate already. What am I doing? It couldn't have been more than an hour later, Raven, that my best friend from college calls me up and goes, "Dude, driving down the highway, just saw a billboard for this University of Maryland program. I couldn't help but think of you." And sort of that was sort of the rest is sort of history from there. I decided to sort of take that nugget of knowledge, this thing that I knew, and go for the program. Didn't get in the first year, really buffed up my skills as I started the episode with, and then got into the program with you. We've graduated. We are class of 2022. And we're really excited to see what the future holds. So thanks for letting me share my what did somebody my origin story, as it was called in the last podcast that I did.
I definitely appreciate sharing the Dr. Cody Peterson origin story there. And I got to admit, I'm a little bit bittersweet about being graduated out of the program now. I really enjoy just being engulfed in learning and stuff and having that ingrained network. But at this point, it's like, now that we've passed on and we've graduated, we have the knowledge and we also have the skills to find the resources that are really helpful for us and be able to teach others. And that kind of segues to my next question. You talked about your two big goals are elevating the patient experience, but also elevating pharmacists in cannabis medicine. And I'm curious as to where you think we can start that in terms of education. Where do you think we, how can we go ahead and start elevating the presence of pharmacists throughout the industry?
Well, we need to start in pharmacy schools. It's just the way it needs to be, because that's planning for the future, right? I can't change the minds of individuals who are already pharmacists, who've been practicing for many years and who may think cannabis is bad. But I certainly can help craft and mold the minds of young pharmacists by exposing them to concepts that are core to cannabis science, but also that connect all this other stuff that pharmacists are already educated about. And I believe this strongly. This is what I'm aiming to do. So I'm a lecturer at UCSD. They have a cannabis elective for their pharmacy school, and medical students are permitted into this cannabis elective as well. So I'm a 2-year veteran of that lecture over there, Jill Simonian, the co-founder or one of the co-founders of the PCCC, with me, is the teacher there. And her and I are now going to be taking over or starting a class at University of California, Irvine, for their new pharmacy school for a cannabis elective in there. So not only I'm trying to walk the talk here, and sort of really lean into getting young pharmacists informed. Because once the young pharmacist is informed, they will draw their own conclusions. But if they're never informed around the importance of this system or even the presence of the endocannabinoid system, then they can't make reasonable decisions, around what they've heard or what is said around cannabis. And just exposing them to this idea will spark curiosity. A whole elective to cannabis, I couldn't be more excited to have the opportunity to help train the next generation of hopefully people who look, on paper, something like me. I don't really, obviously, doesn't matter if they look like me, but you know
No,
what I mean.
exactly. I do know what you mean there, because it's important to have the clinical background, the pharmacy know-how to really make those informed decisions when it comes to cannabis care.
Totally.
Now, you shared your origin story regarding being able to provide the cake for your girlfriend's mother at the time. I would love to hear some of the most powerful healing stories you've witnessed or either or even helped facilitate throughout your career.
Those are the yeah, absolutely. A couple of patients came to mind. So this wouldn't be the first patient that I helped pass away with cannabis, or even I shouldn't even say that, fight cancer. So I had a patient who just recently passed away, who was diagnosed with some. This was only a couple of years ago here in California. Diagnosed with some pretty aggressive cancer. Originally thought to be pancreatic, later found to be peritoneal. The point being is, the patient was given just a few months to live. Started on the standard medicine you would imagine for any patient who gets cannabis, sorry, who gets cancer, including opioids, et cetera. And it started taking the opioids, really was not enjoying them, expressed these concerns to someone at church. And that someone at church just happened to know some Dr. Cody Peterson who specialized in cannabis medicine. So through church, my patient found me. He was a 60-year-old male, again, newly diagnosed cancer, very, very faith-oriented family. Never tried cannabis, never considered this devil's lettuce for anything, and then all of a sudden, put in this situation, decided to try to go this herbal route, found me, got a little bit of guidance, and they just took the ball and ran. And not only did Alex was his name, not only did Alex, make it almost 2 years, he didn't need any opioids until the very end of his life. And in the end, unlike a lot of patients I've seen sort of help pass away with the help of cannabis. Interestingly enough, including Alex, this patient that passed away, his mother, I also happened to help facilitate her cannabis at the end of life. What was interesting, I think, about this whole experience is how it changed the perspective of the whole family around cannabis. That's what was so moving. It's like this family went from being sort of not anti-cannabis, but like, averse, very hands off. That's not really our thing. It's illegal to, wow, this plant saved, provided my father with another whole year of quality of life and provided so much value. That's just one that hits home. He passed away somewhat recently. And so that's what I came to mind immediately. But I'm seeing a patient right now and I'm really excited. There's going to be a new little film, mini doc thing coming out around it, but I'm seeing it. I have a 2-year-old patient who they found me, sought out my care, a friend of a friend once again, who was previously uncontrolled with epilepsy on multiple pharmaceuticals. And we now have him well over 3 months seizure free off of one pharmaceutical, titrating off of another. And his only medicine is now cannabis. He's catching up on all of his learning benchmarks. He's regaining. He's learned how to walk and talk since starting on cannabis. This is all happening in real time. I'm still in contact with his mother regularly. So, that one's really amazing too. It's one thing to help someone pass, right? I mean, that's touching, it's moving, and cannabis can certainly be used in that way. It's another thing to take a child who is going to have a poor quality of life and change their whole future just by introducing a plant.
Exactly. The power of hope. I mean, just being able to provide that hope and really, like you mentioned, it's the improvement of quality of life that's where the healing really is done by cannabis.
Yeah, I mean, look, and this kid doesn't have seizures either, so it's not just the hope,
Yeah.
but it's medicine, right? It can be both. And where the I think a lot of the hope in cannabis lies is that there are so many options, there are so many utilities, there's so many more things that we can still try, yet we know that's generally pretty safe, even in combination with most medicines under the right sort of construct and monitoring. We can try a lot of things with cannabis. It's just we're a little more limited with prescription medications just because of the dynamic nature of the endocannabinoid system and also the dynamic nature of the cannabis plant and the, dozen or so molecules that we can leverage from the plant to produce therapeutic effects. So cannabis offers a lot of hope. You're absolutely right. It also offers a lot of pharmacologic, angles to approach problems.
Exactly. I'm curious, do you face stigma at all in your work anymore?
I think I would have a couple years ago, or maybe outside of California. Not very often. I'll tell you, more often than not, even, healthcare professionals pretty much just want to talk about the kind of things you might want to, you would expect is like, will this cause a positive on a drug screen? Can this help me with my back pain? Will this help my feet? I don't run into very many people who have negative connotations around cannabis. And when I do, I really think it's important to present people with the reality in which we live in, where there's a liquor store that sells both alcohol and cigarettes open up until midnight on almost every corner in every neighborhood in America. And both of those substances are causing far more death and far more harm than marijuana. So even if we've got a marijuana addict, they're way better off than an alcohol addict, and certainly are going to have less likelihood of cancer than a nicotine addict. So there's a real framework that I think needs to come into any conversation. But look, you can't please everybody. You'll never convince everyone that your stance is right, or convince everyone to like you. So I try to, leave the negative when I can, and not engage in some of the negative things that can happen on the internet. But to answer the question, surprisingly less than you thought. I mean, I was originally very scared, very much in the green closet, and I still, occasionally feel a little weird in my position, but my work, my current employer, they paid for my education, right? They paid to send me to the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy to get a degree in cannabis science. So, I mean, right there, we've already come a long way. I will say, though, I did get denied. They did originally say, no, you can't do this. And I had to run it up the flagpole. And eventually they came around, and here's why. I have THC and CBD on the formulary at the hospital already. I have dronabinol or marinol, and I have Syndros, which is both are brand name THC, just made in a lab, not in a plant. And I have plant-derived CBD, known as Epidiolex, on the shelf. And so, I was like, work, you cannot tell me I can't go get an expertise in this. We're pushing these medicines. And it's come in really handy. I work in an emergency department. I see negatives from cannabis, man. I do. I see 12-year-olds who took seven dabs and then they come in because they think they're going nuts. I see 40-year-olds who've taken far too many edibles and they think that they're dead and the world has stopped spinning. I see kids with cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome and cannabis use disorder, and of course I do, because this is still a drug of abuse. Whether that abuse is mild compared to certain other drugs, sure, but it still is, and it's not without side effects. Cannabis is beautiful medicine, but it acts on its system that's in every part of our body. So there's pretty much no separating side effects from therapeutic effects. And in the wrong brain or the wrong body or at the wrong dose, then now we can have problems from THC. Detrimental, very, very rarely, but sometimes, patients at risk of schizophrenia, THC inducing schizophrenia, that is real. We know that that can happen. And so being mindful around which patients might be at most risk for side effects, I think, is a really important conversation.
I mean, you touched on them a little bit, but I'd love to hear more of your thoughts regarding some of the adverse and negative effects around cannabis, because I think that there's a misconception that whenever you work within this field or within this industry, you see it as like a panacea. But like, we recognize that there are pretty significant negative effects that can come along with this. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on those and how you've kind of handled that with your treatment policies and protocols.
So, we know way more about the negatives than the positives. Why? Because there is a very clear research bias towards the negatives driven by NIDA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, which has a big old federal budget to go and prevent their charter. And government organizations, once they get a charter in mind, they can't deviate very well. Their charter as an organization, as a federal entity, is to prevent drug abuse, right? And so their research is always oriented towards preventing drug abuse, not optimizing herbal therapy for patients, not reducing harm implemented by prescription drugs. No, reduce drug abuse, right? Which might include prescription drugs. But I guess what I'm saying is not sort of safeguard people from other things. It's just prevent drugs. So there is very rarely a framing of cannabis in a positive way through the funding there. And it's usually somewhere around like 50-1, like negative research money to positive research money. So there's a big gap there. Now, all that to be said, we have found an alarming amount of associations between cannabis use and a bunch of stuff, right? I talked about schizophrenia. It was originally framed as super dangerous and scary. We now know that it's probably more genetic related and it is dose dependent, and CBD might have a tempering effect. But we do know that THC can short term induce psychosis in an average person, you or me, with the wrong dose, super big dose of edibles, and you will not feel like you. You might even lose track of your current surroundings, which is inherently called psychosis. Now, the good news is the vast majority of us will come right back out of that once the THC wears off. Some individuals, however, have predisposed brains that will not happen, and they might get sort of stuck or induced into a more long-term chronic episode of psychosis, which is a real problem. That's one that I find very concerning. Cannabinoid hyperemesis is another thing that I'm seeing increasingly frequent in the hospital. I work in an ED. I see a lot of patients. I'm seeing this condition maybe not daily, but multiple times a week, guaranteed. multiple times every single week in the hospital, one little pediatric hospital in Southern California. And this is real. Now, it's not perfect, the current situation, our understanding, et cetera, but it's happening to some degree, and it's increasingly more common. We need to figure out what's going on, why patients who are chronically using high THC cannabis products are developing a cyclic vomiting disorder that looks like something called cyclic vomiting syndrome. And so we're trying to unfold that now. If you want to learn more about this specific topic, I just did a YouTube, that's the wrong word. I didn't just do a YouTube. I just did a lecture and it's on YouTube. and you can check that out there. I will share with Raven the link and he will put it in the show notes. So if you want to talk more about CHS, that's that. Other side effects that I see that people just don't get. We wrote an article on the Kenigma about something called the weed shakes. You may or may not have ever experienced this, but some individuals get powerful muscles twitching when they're using cannabis products. Not most people, but some individuals experience this and it can be alarming. And we don't really know why. It's not well defined in the literature, but it's happened. You look like you're going to tell me it happened to you.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've definitely experienced it, and I didn't really link it to cannabis use until I read your article. Because I mean, I never really thought like, okay, it must be the cannabis use. I always would think like, okay, for some reason I'm having uncontrollable, like I'm anxious or I'm not cold, but I'm shivering, like something's going on. And then after I read that, I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so it's twofold, right? The A, your muscles have cannabinoid receptors that are involved in it, maintaining balance of salts and all sorts of stuff. So there could be an association with muscle twitching. Patients have written into me, said, hey, when I smoke weed, my eye twitches. Could that be a thing? Yes, it absolutely could, because all of your muscle fibers, all of the nerves that innervate the muscles have cannabinoid receptors. And so it makes sense that there's this intrinsic connection between cannabis use and sort of muscle spasticity. But even more so around what you said, we also have an effect that's not well known, but is well documented, which is hypothermia. THC reduces your core body temperature. On the Kenigma, again, just type into Google Kenigma monkey and THC, and you will find this article around where scientists in the 1970s were trying to kill animals with weed. They tried really hard to kill the animals, and to be honest, they struggled to get to a dose that would harm a monkey or a dog. Okay. Most monkeys and dogs were not harmed even by the massive doses of THC. I'm talking about 9 grams per kilogram of the animal.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Wow.
So,
They
and
were really
it's,
trying, weren't they?
yes, no, they were very much trying to kill the animals. And unfortunately, they couldn't do it. Now, they did induce very long states of stupor. The monkeys got in this position and sat there for like days, just like kind of curled up into a ball. This isn't a very nice experiment, but appreciate scientists were trying to identify toxic doses of cannabis. What they didn't find is that it affected large mammals very much at all. There wasn't much change to their vital signs. They really just had this change in demeanor. Sometimes they had vomiting, et cetera, but generally no big deal. But when they administered the equivalent dose, right, this 9 grams per kilo to mice, it was a bloodbath, dude. They killed like 98 out of 100 rodents that they gave the THC to. So it doesn't hurt the dog, or not much anyway. Didn't kill the monkey, didn't kill the dog, but it just murders the rodents. So then they're like, well, what happened? Well, rodents are not able to defend or warm up themselves to this core body temperature dropping. So the THC tanks the core body temperature, and the rodents actually sort of freeze to death in a weird roundabout way. Their body temperature cannot be maintained because of the large dose of THC, so they die. It's really interesting phenomenon. So anyway, that's how I really discovered this scenario. The Kenigma and got this idea to write this article, and I happened to be tapped to review it. And all of a sudden, I learned this really interesting thing. And then somebody asked me about the weed shakes, and it all sort of like comes together. And that's where you're getting this content that you like on the Kenigma. It's a growing process. So those are some side effects. Dry eyes, dry mouth, forgetfulness, racing thoughts, anxiety, all of these are common side effects of THC because the endocannabinoid system regulates all of those things. And when we smoke THC, unlike our endocannabinoid system, which produces things in a certain part of the body for a very specific reason, THC just blanketly stimulates the whole system, right? From head to toe, just sort of smacks it. Can be helpful with pain, can be helpful with other things, but it's hard not to get those side effects too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well said. Now, to pivot back to cannabis education, what do you think are kind of the biggest focal points or biggest obstacles that we should be educating on right now to be able to provide academic legitimacy or just legitimacy to cannabis as a whole?
Ooh, that is a really hard question. A really hard question. I don't know if it's so much what we need to be studying. It's what we need to be. Well, I guess maybe that's it. We need studies, right? It's not about academia, it's about research. And what we need to be researching is we need to be researching real outcomes with real people who are using real products. All of those things need to come to fruition. So some of them are starting to come. For the last 40 years, you had to get all of your research weed from NIDA, the people who don't want good results on their cannabis studies. And that's recently changed. A few manufacturers can now sell you cannabis for your research purposes. The other thing that we need to, that we need real sort of tracking of what's happening inside of our humans. So when we use other, medicines, we track things called biomarkers. And I think that we need to do the same on cannabis. We need to be tracking inflammatory tone. We need to be in tracking as many data points as we can, both subjective, meaning I'm asking the patient, how are you feeling? Are you getting better, et cetera, which is what most cannabis science has been so far. And we need objective data. We need data that is very much, this is the number, here's how it is improved. And we need to kind of hybridize these research methods, blend that with intense research on the plant that we're consuming. I'm not talking about just what the THC percentage is. I need to know the terpenoids. We need to know minor cannabinoids. We need to know temperature they vaporized, as much data as we can possibly collect in the real world, and then start to make some reasonable assumptions. I think what we're going to find is a really complicated situation where everybody's different because we all have a unique ECS and we all are just unique. I think you're going to find that because the complexity of the cannabis plant combined with the complexity of the endocannabinoid system is this is really hard stuff to make assessments on. And what we'll likely find, other than maybe some patients who should avoid THC or maybe some patients who, will always need high doses, I think what we'll generally find is a custom tailored approach right where we're at right now. This, even with the best genetic data, a lot of the what we need is many, many years away. So I think for the time being for practitioners, it's going to be about making sure what we want to use is safe, right? I think that's like our immediate need. And then we can try to figure out that perfect blend of terpenes and cannabinoids that this holy grail of cannabis in the future. Like, cool your jets. Let's go one step at a time. This shit's not even legal.
No, I agree. And I think because cannabis is so incredibly complex with all the different, I mean, it's a living plant, has a lot of different chemicals that go into it. And then not to mention the uniqueness of our own biophysiology and our own endocannabinoid system, it does make for a very complex thing to really standardize or understand or find that holy grail.
Supercomputer stuff for sure.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Once we get supercomputers, maybe Google can figure it out. Who knows?
Just need some cold fusion and then we'll be set.
So it sounds like you're saying that not only do we need to get the practitioners up to speed with what we have so far, but we need to continue the research out there. I know that like we're constantly putting research. I mean, once we can reduce some of the federal prohibitions that are stopping a lot of the research, we'll be able to really get some stuff out there. But like you've mentioned, there's been over, 25,000 papers in the last 10, 12 years or so. So the research is coming, but it's still a long ways away before we can really standardize any of that facet of healthcare.
Totally. And I'm happy the research is coming. Obviously, some of it is really high quality science, but unfortunately, a lot of this science is riddled with, how do I say this? Lack of quality inputs, right? Like, we don't have enough good going in. We have a lot of review articles sort of based on some of the same info. So we really need to dive in and sort of hammer down some of these questions, around like ratios of THC and CBD and sort of the, is a whole full spectrum product better than an isolate product? These are questions that could impact patient care now and wouldn't necessarily require I don't know, like super long-term studies, but we need to start researching individuals. People are using cannabis. Some individuals are using cannabis all day long in high doses, and most of these individuals wouldn't really care if as long as their identity was protected, if you knew that, right? Like most individuals, like as long as you weren't going to persecute them for their weed habit, they'd be happy to share. So I think that we need to really track live individuals longitudinally, whilst also funding research to really sort of figure out what the cannabis that people are using is doing, not just like what generically THC doesn't attest to, right? We need to know what THC and the cannabis people are using does in people right now, because people are using it, whether we research it or not, whether the science exists or not, the marketers are still telling people what to expect. So we need to try to validate this and help guide patients.
Exactly. And that's kind of always a double-edged sword because, especially in this industry, it seems that market evolves a whole lot faster than policy and research. So it's important to be able to stay up with that. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, Cody. I know you're coming off a night shift. You mentioned you have another meeting. So the last thing I have for you is I just want to know where listeners of the show can find you. I mean, you put out a lot of great educational content out there.
Totally. I mean, it's going to depend on where your listeners are, and they can find me there. So if you're on Instagram, it's Cannabis PharmD. If you're on TikTok, it's Canna PharmD. If you're on, and I can give you all these right. If you're on LinkedIn, it's my name, Cody Peterson. That's Cody with an I. Don't forget it. It really doesn't, they can find me anywhere. But if you're looking for your cannabis questions answered, I always recommend the Conigma. So that's conigma.com. Because it really is the place where you're going to get the most of the hive brain between myself, but also our cannabis science experts. So I would definitely recommend that. And then, yeah, if you want to follow along on LinkedIn, that's probably the best place where I'm most engaged, but I'm all over there.
Absolutely. I'll put all that down in the show notes for everyone listening. I'm not even paid by the Conigma. I just want to say that I used you guys' resource a lot. What I like about it is not only does it go into some of the things that a cannabis naive patient might think, like how to pick a bowl or how to roll a joint, but then it gets into some of like the deeper science of the terpenes, the entourage effect, and some of the extraction processes and stuff. I like that you guys really cover the gambit of everything cannabis science, but make it easy to read and medically reviewed. So it's just super nice.
Yeah, thanks for the compliment, Raven. I appreciate you reading and look forward to putting out more content, because here's what I know. There's a lot of questions still, and the answers you get on Google are not always reliable. So that's why I tell people just type in the word Conigma after their question. At least you'll get something that you know is sort of fact-based, and then you can go explore more and sort of check what other websites are saying. But at least if you come to the Conigma first, you have a solid idea of what to expect.
Awesome. Yeah, agreed. Well, again, thank you so much, Dr. Cody Peterson, for being on the show today.
Can't wait to hear it go live.
Okay, everyone, thank you so much for listening. That's all we have for today. You can find Dr. Cody Peterson's educational content online via his Instagram at CannabisFarmD, on LinkedIn, or through thekenigma.com, all of which are going to be located down in the show notes. And as always, if you liked this episode, please feel free to send it off to someone who you know would enjoy it. We'd also be eternally grateful if you were to rate us 5 stars and follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. For questions, comments, and community, head over to our official Instagram at plantsavemylife.pod. Until next week, everyone, have a beautiful week.